Hey, this is Blogging Heads. I'm Harry Siegel with the Daily News, and I'm joined by the new executive editor of the Daily Beast, John Avalon, and proud papa of brand new New Yorker, Jack Hoover Avalon.
This is true. This is
and
true.
We're here to talk about who the next mayor of New York City is going to be, and the 2013 election that that keeps shifting, and at the same time. Not all that many New Yorkers outside the press corps seem to be terribly concerned with.
That's true, too.
So, the new frontrunner in a race that's had a few of them, it started off with Christine Quinn, who is the city council speaker, who has been allied with the mayor and helped get both of them an additional term in office. As she was then eclipsed by the comet that is Carlos Danger, or Anthony Weiner.
Who, is it a comet now? Day, I like that. A comet.
A shooting star. burning on its way back to Earth. And now, suddenly, Bill de Blasio, who'd been sort of a distant third and fourth, has skyrocketed into the lead and is approaching, in this crowded, five-real candidate field, the 40% that he would need to avoid a runoff and become the Democratic nominee. So Quinnipiac now has de Blasio at 36, Thompson and Quinn at 21 and 20. The two of them have not moved really in months, from right around 20%. And everyone else being Weiner and Liu, far, far behind at 8 and 6.
As well they should.
So, oh, indeed. De Blasio has a couple of advantages. He's the only person in the Democratic field I can't imagine going to jail for something we already know about. Quinn had a very complicated scandal involving a council slush fund that she inherited and basically ran.
Yeah.
Anthony Weiner is Anthony Weiner. John Liu took cheated matching funds, which New York City has, where you get 4 or 6 to 1 on your dollars, a whole number of ways, and several of his high-ranking staffers have already been convicted of crimes related to this. And Wayne Barrett has been on the trail of Bill Thompson and his moneyed interests, although he is farther from jail than the rest. And de Blasio, partly because he's never had any power. He was a city council member who left when Quinn became speaker, and he didn't. And now as the public advocate, which is a joke of a meaningless office. To his credit, I can't think of anything he'd end up in prison for. And that seems to have been enough, along with being liberal and very liberal and Soros-supported and Weiner's fault to have him way up ahead in the race. John, Mayor de Blasio, what do you think?
Mayor de Blasio, I mean, low bar. He's the one least likely to be indicted. You know, you make a great point that even during the comet of Carlos Danger, Bill de Blasio wasn't registering. He's a guy who had been campaigning for a long time for mayor. Really, his whole assumption of the Office of Public Advocate was openly a mayoral launching pad, nothing more. But he couldn't get traction until the campaign of Carlos Danger imploded. And then all of a sudden, he became sort of the outer borough white liberals' other candidate. And he had a brilliant, I think this can't be underestimated, a brilliant ad featuring his son Dante that coincided perfectly with the stop and frisk escalation debate. And those two things really escalated him into first place. He is a preeminent politician. He is a really skilled politician, an engaging guy, a likable guy, an intelligent guy, or a calculating guy. He also, I think it's fair to say, would be the most far-left mayor in New York City's recent history by pretty much any margin.
Well, he worked on the Dinkins campaign and for David Dinkins. That was sort of where he made his first political moves. We should mention, by the way, that His wife is black, and his son Dante has what's become an iconic Afro. So right now, remarkably, Quinnipiac has him up among everyone, among liberal likely voters, conservative likely voters, black likely voters, which is striking because Bill Thompson, who was the Democratic nominee in 2009, and the former comptroller is black.
Yeah.
So he's really riding a wave, and he is an impressive politician, skilled. And just, he seems very unlikely to knock himself off his own horse.
At least yet. I mean, there have been a lot of tough punches. But what's so striking me about these polls about Bill de Blasio is not just that he seems to be leading in every cohort, but there's an illogic. I mean, the New York Times had a poll they co-sponsored. I may have been with Quinnipiac, that showed him leading in terms of the candidate folks thought would be toughest on crime. I mean, that's just operating in a fantasy land in terms of what his actual proposals are. You could say that's proxy for improving police-community relations, perhaps. But, I mean, Quinn is campaigning as someone, you know, who is very close to Ray Kelly. Bill Thompson, controversially, says he would not simply do away with stop and frisk, which would be sort of the easy, obvious political thing to do. So to some extent, I think you're seeing, you know, New Yorkers love to back a winner. This is not a unique New Yorker dynamic. But you're starting to see that bandwagon mentality that is defying logic and policy, which ultimately, I think, do start to matter in a general election, if not a low turnout Democratic primary. And that's something for folks to fully appreciate. When Quinn and Thompson are 20 and 21% respectively, who makes a runoff with Bill de Blasio could be a matter of a couple thousand votes in a city of 8 million. This has always seemed to be, to me, an insane way to pick such a powerful position as mayor of New York, a closed partisan Democratic
right.
primary.
So I mean, the way this works is the relative handful of voters, maybe 500,000, who show up in a five-way Democratic primary,
right,
effectively end up picking the person who, even given 20 years of non-Democratic mayors, is very likely the next mayor of New York, where Democrats outnumber Republicans by about 6-1.
Yeah.
And it's a closed primary, so only registered Democrats get the vote. Now, de Blasio, because he's come up in the polls very late, has not come in for nearly as much scrutiny as other candidates. So his big signature policy proposal, outside of policing and ending stop and frisk, has been this plan to introduce universal pre-K.
Mm-hmm.
The Daily News editorial board took a very hard shot at this weekend that de Blasio's signature proposal has little chance of becoming a reality and even less of a chance of working out as promised if it does. So this plan, which would cost about $500 million a year for universal pre-K, which is 48,000 more slots, and for after-school programs, for some reason, for junior high school students, he's got a temporary tax that he actually miscalculated and didn't notice until the Times said, wait a minute, your numbers don't add up, on the rich to pay for this. The rich meaning people who make $500,000 a year or more. He keeps saying there's 400,000 millionaires in New York, but in fact, there's 36,000 people who make whatever the tax would be, and again, it would be at a higher rate than he said, who'd pay for this over 5 years. And then the question of what would happen over those 5 years,
right.
A whole number of ways, it just seems flimsy. Like, the city can't actually fill the full-time pre-K slots it has now. It sends people from the Department of Education door-to-door to try to get parents in. So the idea, you'd triple the size of the program, fill every slot, and that this would work at a this would be a high or reasonable quality in what's already a patchwork system seems evidently ridiculous.
Yeah, and go on.
No, that's all. There's none of the other candidates, because until recently they had not been gunning for de Blasio, and suddenly both Thompson and Quinn are, which indicates
sure.
Their own polling sees him as potentially breaking 40% as well, because otherwise they'd be trying to knock each other out of second place. But he's just in this weird sort of lucky way had a free ride, and you get the idea that this five-way race in certain ways is like a crapshoot, that if the election ends in September, as it does, one thing could happen. If it's October, it could be an entirely different result. Just at some point, it has to stop.
Yeah, and again, I think you're illustrating one of the dangers of these closed partisan Democratic primaries. I mean, policy is it becomes an emotional attribute. I mean, this is true in national politics a lot of the time, too. You get bumper sticker policy. But this is the liberal Democratic equivalent. I mean, if you haven't done your math right, which is pretty basic, you got a real problem. But this is the classic sort of, I think it's fair to say, liberal trap, which is it's the cost of good intentions. Universal pre-K sounds great, but de Blasio's, I think, discredit. He's actually leading in his ads, not even with the proposal as much with raise taxes on the rich, and that becomes a marker of political courage.
Right, and that's coherent and clear, which some of the other candidates who are triangulating for votes have not been. It's just
right.
It's easy to say what de Blasio is for.
Right, well, and what it is he's running to the left in a Democratic primary. This is a tried and true formula. But if it succeeds, it does have the obvious problem make it more difficult to tack to the center. And it's worth reiterating a point you made briefly. New York City has thrived under 20 years of Republican and independent mayors, Rudy Giuliani, Mike Bloomberg. full disclosure, so people know, I work for Rudy Giuliani very proudly, second term in his 97 reelect. So, you know, I get mayoral campaigns and mayoral politics. You know, Ed, even going back to a Democrat like Ed Koch, you know, he was able to sort of tack to the center-right of the Democratic primary. That was a winning formula. The only successful candidate in recent memory who really ran to the left of a Democratic primary was David Dinkins, who presided over, I think, what is objectively, despite Bill de Blasio's emotional connection to David Dinkins, a failed one-term mayoralty in which New York City hit a peak of 2,245 murders in 1990. So there are all sorts of interesting politics around that, but ultimately it's rooted in policy. And the fact that this is sort of policy incoherent, but the politics are tacked to the left, could create real fundamental problems for Bill de Blasio, even after I think people in New York have started to take the gains of the last 20 years for granted and sort of think, oh, you know, let's just, you know, a liberal Democrat will preserve the gains but feel better on some of the social issues, but where the rubber meets
right.
the road,
spread the wealth,
yeah,
and keep the policing gains, but have nicer police, and keep tax revenues up, which is very easy to promise, but has created a fair amount of skepticism.
Yeah.
At least among the elites. Every major newspaper editorial board endorsed Quinn, who it looks like may not, despite that, even make the runoff.
Let's just digression. Talk about the crisis of confidence among New York City editorial boards if their number one candidate doesn't make the runoff. It's almost enough to make you wonder whether the editorial board endorsement process is relevant. That's his hearsay. But and something, frankly, I think is dangerous if it's totally disregarded by an electorate. But that would be shocking if she won the trifecta and doesn't make the runoff. It's kind of a big deal, to quote Ingram.
Well, I think with Quinn in particular, every editorial board supported Bloomberg changing the law with Quinn to allow both of them a third term, which infuriated a lot of voters, not just Democrats.
Yeah, David Carr was one of the few people who stepped up early to criticize that in print against the wishes of his bosses, frankly.
Mm. So let's shift over to the Republicans for a second, because there will actually be a Republican in the race. There are three candidates. There is Cassie Matides, who is a sort of junior Bloomberg in certain ways. He's
very
a billionaire.
Few ways. Yeah, he's a billionaire.
He's a billionaire. It's pretty much the way.
Yeah.
And has run a not very serious campaign, but has a lot of money to spend on TV. And has been using a lot of it to gun at the guy who's been leading in everyone's internal polls, who's also a Giuliani administration veteran, Joe Loda, and who is fighting, just as a Republican, a real uphill fight to become mayor. Some people think that he has been, in certain ways, running to potentially run in 2017. So like with Dinkins, Giuliani ran against Dinkins in 89, came up just short, about 40,000 votes. And 4 years later, New Yorkers, about a 40,000-vote swing was enough to make him mayor. Loda's a serious guy.
Yeah.
Ran operations under Giuliani, ran the MTA for Cuomo, and was widely praised for the job he did after Sandy, but seems to be, for now at least, sort of laying back and waiting to figure out what Democrat he's running against and to see if some big external event might shift the dynamics late in the race. So in 2001, very quickly, the public advocate was the Democratic nominee, Mark Green. And remarkably, in the polls leading up to the primary and then the runoff, or the potential runoff, the number one issue for prime Democratic voters who selected Green, who then just lost to Bloomberg, and what was really a massive surprise at the time, it's easy to forget 12 years later, the number one issue for Democratic primary voters was education. In a city where the mayor did not control the Board of Education or the schools.
Right.
This is 2 weeks after 9/11. Democratic primary voters are sometimes a little insane.
Yeah, it's
and
hard,
that
it's hard
be
to
an opening
that.
For Joe.
Yeah, I mean, and George McDonald's running, founder of the Doe Fund. But, you know, a couple things about
but
this.
But not relevantly.
Not relevantly, that's true. You know, it's important for folks to appreciate the unique species that is the New York Republican tradition. It is, by and large, a progressive Republican tradition, something that's extinct almost everywhere else, except occasionally you get glimpses of it in the Northeast. It is, I think, not coincidentally, been key to the city's success over the past 20 years. And the fact that Rudy was a Republican, Bloomberg elected as a Republican, then ran subsequently on the back of his own financial wealth as an independent, fairly more or less seamless political philosophy, real consistency and coherence. And in a city which is otherwise essentially a one-party town, the Democratic Party controlling virtually all other, well, literally all other citywide elected positions, and then 80 to 90% of the city council, that political independence has been a very effective counterweight. In this Republican primary, I do think that Republicans are in trouble because they, Kasimatidis is the classic self-funded candidate a la Bloomberg. While he is an in-law with the New York State Republican chairman, Ed Cox, and has spent a huge amount of money, he's not somebody who, when you see him on television, radiates electability. He is a self-made man, a grocery magnate, and in many ways that's a very impressive American story, but he doesn't radiate clarity or command, certainly on television, in making those appeals. But because he has so much money, and because you're talking about perhaps a 55,000-person turnout Republican primary, the question is the financial support he's given to supporters, in the past, donations to other politicos, is that going to be enough to make this more competitive in the polls show? Joe is someone I worked with in Rudy Giuliani's City Hall, someone who I know personally and professionally, and has also cleaned up with the New York editorial boards. I don't think his campaign is simply waiting for an exterior event. Obviously, that was key to Bloomberg winning in 2001. But I do think if the Democrats nominate the furthest left candidate, that itself is an opening. Big cities are not as liberal as the stereotypes suggest. That is one of the big misnomers. It's true whether it's San Francisco or New York City. There is a pragmatism, urban residents, that realize that the far left is sometimes clueless when it comes to basic real-life things like crime, quality of life, et cetera, et cetera. And Joe's a classic operations guy, a guy who can get things done. And he's a lot, I think, funnier and edgier than maybe has been communicated through his campaign to date. So I wouldn't count him out by any means. And I don't think this campaign is simply throat clearing for 17. I think that's ridiculous.
He got a lot of attention. There were two kittens that got stuck on the train track.
Yeah.
And the trains got shut down, the queue line and the B, for a few hours while they got these kittens who were curled up under the third rail in some like real-world explosion of an incredible internet meme. So they shut down the trains to save the kittens. And then all the mayoral candidates get asked about this. And the Democrats, range from, I would do that, you have to watch out for kittens, to Anthony Weiner saying, I would personally crawl down and save the kittens. He can say whatever he wants. He's not going to be mayor.
Thank God.
And then Joe said, no, the trains have to run. You can't shut them down anytime something somewhat cute happens. As I recall,
the Daily News was very gentle and reasonable about his pragmatic concerns to keep the trains running on time.
Well, we ran a picture on the cover of him looking very evil with the, I believe the headline was, Die, Kitties, Die.
I think that was almost exactly the headline, yeah.
And then 2 days later, we endorse him.
Yeah.
Tabloids are complicated places. But going back to how schizophrenic this field has been and the question of a broader vision and New Yorkers who are not, say, prime Democratic primary voters and are sort of concerned with a broader city at large and don't chop up into interest groups. This is why, before Anthony Weiner's second meltdown, he explodes in the polls. He says middle class a lot, and he has some ideas for them. And that giant obvious space, something like the somewhat legendary Koch Republicans, the conservative Democrats,
Koch left Democrats,
reacted
exactly.
Very emotionally to that. Like, here's somebody who's speaking to our concerns and to a broader city, in some sense that some of these gains maybe could go away. And what's incredible is when Weiner fades, de Blasio, who is running to the left of the field, whereas Weiner is very much running to the right of it, both of them being, white ethnic outer borough Democrats, picks up that support. Because for many of these voters, having some sort of clear and coherent message for the city at large and an idea of a greater good seems to be resonating almost independent of what that greater good is. I don't see how else you can translate support from two candidates who are so ideologically distant.
I think you raise a great and important point. I mean, it does also speak to the fact that there's something about Quinn, I think in particular her decision to enable Bloomberg's third term, that is a deal-breaker for many Democrats. And Billy Thompson, who was the Democratic nominee last time around and has the support of everyone from Al Sharpton to Al D'Amato, between the two Al's, perhaps, it clearly that hasn't been a compelling alternative either. Maybe seems a little retread as well. But certainly no coherent alternative. I will mention something that Mike Daly, the former Daily News columnist now at the Daily Beast, mentioned to me, because I think it's a great and sort of hopeful point about the race and the way that's skewed, which is, you know, in New York City and probably all big city politics, there's a certain predictable ethnic algebra. You know, you try to put together different ethnic groups into a winning coalition, particularly in closed Democratic primaries. And it's one of the reasons that the party really likes to protect the closed Democratic primary, because the math is relatively simple. You know, you get this union endorsement, that union endorsement, this interest group, you're up to 40%, theoretically. For the first time in New York, and I think it's a sign of a really healthy evolution as a city, you know, towards a more perfect union, if you will, that African-Americans are not supporting the African-American candidate. Women are not supporting the female candidate. Susan Sarandon, I think infamously, as an instant classic of crassness, said, you can't just vote your vagina. Explaining why she was shifting her support from Quinn to de Blasio. I do think that frankly, de Blasio's ad featuring his biracial children, but Dante in particular, was so powerful as it helped skew that. I do think that's a really healthy silver lining to what otherwise has been sort of a sordid, uninspiring race.
So, this raises the question, this seems to be a reasonably high-stakes election. It's the first open election in New York City in 12 years. Why has this been an uninspired race? Is it because the candidates have largely been playing that sort of older politics that you were discussing?
I think we're seeing voter turnout decrease in municipal elections across the country. L.A. had a very pathetically low turnout. I think to some extent we're taking our civics for granted, absent crises. I think Bloomberg's mayoralty has been very, very successful, but because he has sort of buttressed broad success in terms of economic growth, low crime, with a purchasing power, frankly, that comes with his mayoralty, I think the civic culture is a little lazier. It's a little more sort of laissez-faire and benign. And in that dynamic where Democrats want to keep a closed Democratic primary in place, it's not doing a lot to engender strong opinions or excitement among people who aren't broadly part of the activist class. And I think that's dangerous. I mean, we saw it in L.A., we saw it in New York. You know, you're talking about a city of 8 million people that would be the nation's 11th largest state, and a very strong mayor form of government, which was key to the city's success in the past. A 1989 charter revision that created a strong mayor as opposed to what was in the past, where the mayor was constantly a figurehead negotiating with the Board of Estimate, not to nerd out too much. I think now the city is in a place where we take the gains for granted. We start to not take policy seriously as a choice between candidates, but look at the pure personality and assume that a lot of the progress will occur regardless. And let me tell you, man, if you know anything about city history, but New York City history in particular, that is a dangerous assumption, it seems to me.
So the case the tabloids have been making, I think the news somewhat more reasonably than the Post, where we're 20 seconds away from Detroit. It could all get flushed down, but broadly, both in the news coverage
maybe 8 hours
editorial coverage. These gains in policing and the economy are really fragile. So the argument basically in support of stop and frisk boils down to three things. This is what you want police doing. If they're not doing this, they're just responding after crimes have been committed. If you don't have a police force that's willing to be proactive, you have one that again, just sort of sits and waits, and then people test, and crime starts going back up. That we've had these boom times and this financial gain for the last many years now, since 08, really, in part because of the Fed, and that's likely to go away. Tax revenues might shrink. And so this idea that this next mayor, which all the candidates have pretty much had, that you just sort of assume the Bloomberg numbers as a baseline, that New York's going to have, you know, maybe around 400 voters, that we're going to be able to spend, in Queen City spending, in the range of $50 billion. And that we can just sort of continue and grow from there. So de Blasio's pre-K thing, for instance, is sort of predicated on we need more money. And he said this with education spending in general. One of his lines is, of course, we have to start with the money we already have. Spending under the current mayor has gone up in real dollars, has almost doubled in real dollars. There's not been a ton in the way of educational gains to show for that. Mm-hmm. You're thinking about your gain on each dollar. And the idea that obviously we just need to push up from there and that there'll be additional money from there is something I think makes large swaths of the city and its sort of institutional leadership very suspect. Mm-hmm. But voters, and not just Democratic primary voters, have seemed disinterested in as a concern. No, we have this, and let's work it out from there. The other strange thing with ethnopolitics I just want to quickly mention is while de Blasio is leading Thompson in black voters, according to the most recent polls, in the primary right now, and by a fairly substantial amount, I think 8 points.
Yeah.
Asked who they would vote for in a runoff between de Blasio and Thompson, Thompson is leading.
Huh.
Which is interesting.
That
it sort of shows the ways in which five-way math creates really bad outcomes.
Yeah.
That a winner or a loo potentially can decide who the next mayor of the city is, even though they have no chance of being that person.
Yeah.
And means that everyone is just having tactical attacks. Whoever, it's the old dictator joke, you know, you go in the field, and any head of corn that rises up, you chop it off. Everyone aims all their fire at the front runner. There's not any, and it's tactical, so there's not really sort of any broader discussion of vision or what's next.
Uh-huh.
And yet this process likely decides who we end up with for 4 or potentially 8 years.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, I think people need to appreciate also that the 20 years we've had of Republican independent mayors is largely a historic anomaly. And that's why I think it's so sinister, those political operatives and party bosses who really, frankly, prefer low turnout, closed partisan primaries because they can control the outcomes, in effect, or predict the outcomes much more effectively. And this is not, in my opinion, the best way to pick, you know, the largest position in New York, you know, the second toughest job in the world. I personally think an open primary top two would be much better, but bottom line, you know, it's why I think participation is so key and why, you know, the fact that we're likely looking at low turnout is so troubling because strategically this does screw up so much of what of an honest debate about ideas. It becomes tactical. It becomes very defensive. Candidates end up looking very defensively at trying not to make a mistake rather than speak out honestly or put forward practical plans, and that leads to a dumb civic debate at a time when it could be more important. And then you have 5 weeks to focus on it, if that, between after a run for a general.
So putting it plainly, Mayor Bloomberg has spent hundreds of millions of dollars in and beyond his elections. He spent about over $300 million on the books, running for office. He spent a lot of money in between. He's used foundations, the Ford Foundation in particular, to sort of pass money off. And this has silenced a lot of the activist groups and sort of the core constituencies you'd otherwise be talking about. 12 years now.
Yeah.
Next year, that ends. And so there is this interesting question of what comes next. And part of what's been weird about this year is stop and frisk. There was just a judge's decision. That this has been practiced in an unconstitutional way. The council has just passed, over the mayor's vetoes, 2 bills creating an inspector general position to watch over parts of the police department and allowing people to sue, not for money, for basically unconstitutional stop and frisk. So we're having this very strange rearguard fight about policies that have been in place for over a decade now that are going away, and very, very little sense of what New York is going to look like in 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
We're having an election about the past for someone who will govern us into a very different future.
Yeah.
Do you have any sense of what challenges are next for the city? I haven't even mentioned the contracts.
The
entire city workforce is without contracts.
Yeah, I mean, look, it highlights the fact that ignoring policy or thinking that we can have progress without a continuity of policy is a really dangerous, lazy assumption. It's typically lazy. I mean, and you just alluded to the fact that this mayor has left the next mayor with a whole boatload, essentially a citywide almost, of contracts needing to be negotiated with the unions. Huge pension costs that should rationally constrain the next mayor, but when Democrats win by trying to get union elections, it creates favors that need to be followed through on. And I'm not saying that unions are incapable of being reasonable when they look at the bottom line, but they have interests that can be diametrically at odds with the taxpayers' interest. And when you look at the huge unfunded obligations, famously New York City pays more for firefighters that are retired than active duty firefighters. We're paying more for fires that have been put out than for fires that could break out at any minute. That's a relatively fragile fiscal backdrop to the civic gains that have been made. And there's a reason why, you know, we are always only a couple of bad cycles away from looking at fundamental fiscal problems. And folks who assume that 400 murders a year is the new normal really aren't paying attention. And so I'm not one saying that, you know, the sky's going to fall just because we have a change in mayoralty. The city's strong. We had a new mayor, you know, a couple months after 9/11, and we not just survived, we thrived. But to be ignorant about the policies that have got us to this place is really, really dumb and dangerous, in my opinion. That doesn't mean you can't improve things. That doesn't mean new mayors aren't necessary to put their own, you know, assumptions in place. But people who are kind of tuned out and checking out and assume that the safer, cleaner city that they've come to expect is inevitable, they're not paying attention.
And here we are, what looks like a week away from potentially a runoff between Bill Thompson, who's been endorsed by the teachers union, which is very large and powerful, and Bill de Blasio, the Battle of the Bills, who is the favorite candidate of the Working Families Party, which is one of the weird small third parties that profits immensely from New York's closed small turnout elections.
Absolutely. Yeah, and could be a huge factor in a runoff. And then there's, and, you know, I don't think you should count out Christine Quinn entirely, although certainly her numbers have fallen precipitously. And then we'll see what happens with the Republican primary. This is a party who, under closed partisan primaries, chose Carl Palladino for governor over Rick Lazio. You know, there's that impulse in these tiny turnout to let the kind of the true believers take over the process and create unelectable candidates in a general election. So, not a
John Cassimatidis has been running for mayor since 2006, give take, when Bloomberg was not thinking about a third term.
Sure.
And it looked like we're going to have an election in 2009.
Sure.
And the extent to which he is, it's not just he looks bad in TV ads, that he just doesn't have a, not a narrative, but like a basic grasp of like how large the city's budget is, how much
policy
money he can spend and how.
Yeah.
Just not trick questions or ones that are meant to disqualify is really disconcerting. But he's spending enough, and he's spending it mostly to attack Loda, who I think both candidates' internal polls have up, that there's a real chance he can do enough damage that John wins, or that Joe wins, but is wounded in a general election, he'd already be very behind in to start with. And the Tuesday, in the Democratic primary, first round, maybe the only round, that we're going to find out who our next mayor is, and that maybe 170,000 New Yorkers or so are going to make that decision in a city of well more than 8 million. And that's, of itself, I think, distressing.
That's not what democracy is supposed to look like.
Right. Any last words?
No, I think we said it all. Let's just hope everyone who's eligible to vote turns out on Tuesday, September 10th, and
yes.
You know, let's hope the turnout stays hot throughout the process, because nothing's inevitable until voters say so.
On that note, thank you, and I'm with you, and it's going to be interesting to see.
It will. Thanks, my friend. Be well.